And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. I'm Paul Dottino, along with David Deal. We'll be with you for the next hour to talk New York Giants football. You can call us up at 201-939-4513. You could also go to Twitter, hit us up at hashtag Giants Chat. Or if you prefer, you could just kind of listen and watch the show and have a good time, because we're going to be here for an hour to take your questions, your comments, and all of your thoughts about the New York Football Giants as they prepare for Sunday's game against the Philadelphia Eagles. 1 o'clock kickoff at MetLife Stadium. An odd Sunday, by the way. The Jets and Giants both have 1 o'clock games. It's one of only two weekends this season when both New York teams will be kicking off at the same time.
But we're not worried about that other team. We're worried about the New York Giants and this football organization coming off of a bye week after playing a game in London, beating the Rams, now getting ready for the NFC East rival to come into town for a 1 o'clock game in MetLife Stadium. And you just think about what this game means to both of these football teams, considering the fact that the Eagles, the Redskins, and Giants are all sitting at 4-3 right now in the standings of the division.
You know, David, it's funny. I had to do a spot with WIP in Philadelphia last night, and their host was expressing to me that the Eagles are a bit concerned because they've lost three of their last four. Obviously, there's this Josh Huff situation that happened overnight where he ran into some trouble with the authorities. And then on top of that, this is a team that has not won a game within the division yet. And so he was telling me that this game is like monumentally important for the Eagles, and I was trying to tell him the game holds a lot of significance for the Giants.
It most certainly does, and if you think about this for the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, they've had a road game stretch right now where they're 1-3 on that road game stretch, and they've been 3-0 at home. So it has been a struggle for them on the road, and it's going to be no different in this game. We're still waiting to see what's going to take place with Huff, with their receiver, who we've seen the impact not only that he's had on their offense, but on their special teams as a returner as well. And also, I think we're waiting to see how the Giants are going to respond more than anything off of the bye week, getting back to health. You know, the bye week is a time for self-evaluation. You're looking at the things that you're doing well, the things that you're not doing so well. And one of the things that the Giants talked about going into this is becoming a better football team, especially offensively, finding ways to run the football. So this is a huge week for the Giants to come out and prove that bye week came at a perfect time, that they're healthy and they're ready to make a big second-half push here.
David, let me draw on your experience as a player now, because coming out of the bye week, everybody has always talked about how the Giants never had a great record under Coach Coughlin coming out of the bye. Now, Coach McAdoo, in his first year as a rookie head coach, he has decided that the guys were given Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off of last week. They had five straight days off coming back after the London trip. They reported to work on Monday. They had a walkthrough on Monday, had Tuesday off, and now they're back at practice today. What is your thoughts, or what is your impression of how he has handled the time off?
Well, I think it's all based on the coach's decision on where he feels the football team is at currently and what he feels that they need to do. And I think that Coach McAdoo, coming off of that win in London, the big road trip, having that happen, and then to come back and to evaluate things, I think that he felt that this was a time that the players needed to rest, they needed to get away, they needed to spend time with family. But having said that, when the team came back on Monday, they were focused, they were ready, they were regrouped, and they were energized, and you could feel the energy in the building, because when you play one team, you feel the energy. But when you play the Eagles or you play the Cowboys, you can feel the energy in the building, and that was no coincidence that the way that Monday was ran, the way that it felt here, you could feel that it was an NFC East Eagles week.
Yeah, the Eagles kind of get your attention, don't they?
Yes, they most certainly do.
Now, we will get the injury report out of the way here, folks. Now, remember, as we give this to you, I want you to understand this is strictly a pre-practice injury report. We don't know exactly what the Giants are doing out of practice because they start at 12:10, which is in a couple of moments. We're going to be in here, so we can't report to you exactly what's going on. But we were told to be on the lookout for the following issues. Beckham's got the hip, but we did see him already do stuff on Monday.
Yes.
So I'm anticipating he's going to work through that. Burhe, still with the concussion protocol. He was limited with non-contact drills on Monday. Again, remains to be seen. Diassi, sore ankle, but we've known that for a couple of weeks.
He'll
he's fighting
fine.
Through it.
Yeah, he'll play.
Nassib has a sore elbow, we're being told now. I don't understand that one, but we'll find out as soon as we can. Marshall Newhouse with a calf, was out there in limited capacity on Monday. He's trying to work himself back in, but I think Bobby Hart has kind of solidified that job.
I think that he has as well.
All right. Bobby Rainey is listed with a calf. Did not know of that injury until this morning. Don't know how serious it is. I certainly hope he's able to go. He's got some quicks you could use against this Eagles defense.
Yes, he does, and his ability to catch out of the backfield will be something that is needed to slow down the pass rush of the Philadelphia Eagles front four.
And Darian Thompson still listed with the foot. Now, he's been out of the boot for a couple of weeks. Saw him on Monday. Did do some limited stuff in practice. Says he's not 100% yet, but he's getting closer, and he feels good about it. He was not committing as to whether or not he would play in this week's game, but the arrow's up on him.
It is, and it's needed because we all saw the flexibility that it brought when they had a healthy safety position with him, with Landon Collins, and the flexibility of what they were able to do with the safeties, with Eli Apple, and what Steve Spagnuolo was able to do scheme-wise to play into each one of those players' strengths.
You know what's funny in the Rams game in London, and I just want to reflect on one moment for this game, because Giants had 3 sacks in that game and 4 interceptions.
Yes.
2 apiece by Collins and DRC. Now, we always hear this, David, and again, you've been in the trenches. They talk about turnovers come in bunches. They talk about sacks come in bunches. And sometimes you luck into them. I get it. But other times, it's, hey, you keep getting after it. You keep chopping the rock. And sooner or later, it starts to break. Do you think that that was an aberration for this team, those sacks and those turnovers? Or have you seen enough to believe that they were going to come eventually?
I think that you've seen enough that they would come eventually. But having said that, you take away one interception, unbelievable job by DRC, just playing wide receiver. The ball was thrown. He was the only one in the end zone. So you have to take that
pressure
one.
By JPP,
yes,
though.
With pressure, okay. By JPP. But having said that, I think that was a culmination of all the things that we were waiting for out of this Giants defense. I think that was the expectations we had coming into this season, with how much was emphasized getting new players, emphasize on scheme in turning things around for the Giants defense. And when you're able to create those type of takeaways, you only help your offense. When you're able to pressure a quarterback the way that the defensive line was, that's where it aids into those interceptions like they had. And the other thing, when you have a group cohesively swarming to the football, playing fast, that's where you start seeing those turnovers take place, because it's not like they were just hand-gifted to them. There was tipped ones that players need to be flying and getting to the football in order to create those plays.
And remember, Wentz has only thrown, Carson Wentz, only 3 picks so far in his rookie season.
Yep.
He's been very clean with the ball.
Very clean with the ball. You could tell that Doug Peterson and this West Coast system, they take the pressure off of them. They're going to be a run-first team.
Yeah.
But with this West Coast system, you have them with a lot of three steps, easy throws, a lot of screens to the running backs, a lot of screens to the wide receivers. They want to get him going early. They want to get his completions going early so that they build the confidence where he can manage the game. But even with managing the game, he's made some unbelievable throws with them changing the launch point, with boot protections, with different things to make him outside of the pocket. He's showing athleticism,
yes,
and the confidence and the poise to deliver it like you need to, even as a young rookie.
All right, so let's get to the phone calls. We will start with Len from Columbia, Maryland. You're first on the show. Hi, Len.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Good, good. Paul, I was interested in your opening comments where you referred to the Eagles as our rivals, and David, you talked about how the energy changes with an NFC East when you're playing an NFC East team. And I can just tell you, in this household, there is no team more disliked than the Philadelphia Eagles. It is Eagles week. The other two teams I can tolerate, the Eagles. Let's hope we win the game. We got them at home. Recent results, they don't play as well on the road as they do at home, and I think that's probably been true over the last couple of years, so I'm kind of hoping for that. A couple of things I'd just like to play out with you real quick. If Paul, I think you've heard me say this before. You know, looking at some of the stats, Eagles middle linebackers, you know, same defense, 4-3 defense, middle linebackers, 29 solo tackles, Giants middle linebacker is 6. We got to play more downhill at that middle linebacker spot, guys. We got to get more out of it. Now, maybe you know, maybe we'll get some help on the short passing game.
Len, before you go any further,
yeah.
I'm going to ask you, just in general, rather than focusing on that little pinhead of a stat, the Giants' rush defense has been pretty darn good this year. And does it matter to you, honestly, if Landon Collins is making the tackles? Because he's making them up at the line of scrimmage. It's not like they're 6 yards downfield. He's making tackles up at the line. He's filling gaps. And quite frankly, I think that JPP and Olivier Vernon have played the run much better than most people would have anticipated. So that all contributes to a good rush defense. And you're going to tell me the middle linebackers don't have enough tackles. I'm going to tell you, I don't know that it matters who makes the tackle.
I don't think that it really does either, as long as the tackle gets made and you minimize the effectiveness of a rushing team. And I think when you really think about it, Landon Collins is almost an extension of the linebackers, the way that he plays, leading the team with 57 tackles. You know, he's been the one player that has made the biggest jump from his first year to his second year, playing this year with a lot more confidence, playing in a system where now he has players on the outside to help him in coverage. But you have to give him credit for the way that he's played. And I agree with you. I understand that you want to see statistical numbers out of linebackers because that's what the Giants organization and that's what the defense has been about. But if you look at it as a team, they're getting it done.
Well, I agree with you on that. The reason for my comment, I think we can do better in rush defense. And
well,
I think it starts getting
that's okay.
better. I think starts with that middle linebacker position. We got to get some tackles in outside the numbers. Got to stick in. No, it's. I mean, it's not a 3-4. I mean, it's a 4-3 defense. The middle linebacker is the key guy. I mean, I don't know how you can brush off the fact that we're not getting any production out of that middle linebacker position against the run. All right, listen. Everybody's got their opinion. Can I talk about the run game for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm hoping this week it starts to come around. This may just be my perception, David and Paul, but although it didn't ring true for the Rams game, I think we block better against 4-3 defenses than we do against 3-4 defenses.
That typically
you
has been.
Feeling, do you have any feeling on that, or is that just
David?
You know,
David will describe why.
Fan.
Yeah, no, I want him to describe why. But I agree with you. It does seem like the Giants in the last 2 or 3 years have had more trouble with 3-4s.
Yeah, I think the one thing that when you're playing up against a 3-4, you have the misconception that there's all these different places to run because of the double bubble over the two guards. But having said that, what it does is it puts a lot more players on one-on-ones, individual blocks, where the guards have to get up to the second level, and it allows defenses to do more things in regards to stunts up front, plug in linebackers. I think just when you line up and you have a four-down front up against you, I think as an offense, it just gives you the confidence because you faced it the most out of any group that you'll ever face. You face the 4-3 way more than you
right.
do a 3-4, but also
yeah.
the cohesion and the double teams up against a 4-3 compared to a 3-4 are much different because there's so much more body mass to hit
yeah.
up against
yeah.
a 3 technique compared to a 1 technique who's overhead of the center playing a 1 gap.
Would
yeah.
you agree
no,
also? Hold on, Len, hold
didn't.
On. Would you agree also that 3-4 defenses can do much more variety of things with that strong safety?
Oh, yeah.
To
they
give you more different
with,
looks?
Yeah, of course. They can line them up into different areas of the box. They can stem. They can do a lot. There's a lot more flexibility out of
right.
a 3-4 scheme than there is out of a 4-3.
Yeah. Now, it didn't ring true for the Rams game. We didn't run very well, and the Rams had a 4-3, had a 4-3 front. But, yeah, you know, I'm hoping that maybe, although this Eagles team, you know, that I don't think we're going to face a faster front four all year than we're going to see on Sunday.
They get after
Eagles.
It.
I mean, those guys are really quick.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping it turns out that way. Yeah, David, one thing on you know, back to the run game again. You know, a number of reasons for the fact that we're not running the ball well. Right? I mean, you know, we can go through the whole list. We probably come up with 6 or 7 different things. You know, down at the bottom of my list, guys, is play calling. I don't lend a lot of credence to play calling being a problem with a run game. I mean, plays are not designed to lose yardage. They're designed for guys.
Okay.
You know, to block players okay. on the other team. So for me, it's all about execution, and it's about whether or not we can run block. So far, we haven't shown that we run block very well. Again, I hope against the 4-3, we played a little bit. You have any comments on that? I mean,
Len, we're going to let you go and let David finish.
Versus the execution of the play, as called.
All right, Len, thank you. Just stay with us, and David will answer you.
No, and in that regards, I think that that is something that the coaches have done this past week, diagnosed and see where they were in regards to play calling and to putting their offense and defense in positions to win. How can they maximize different types of, whether it be wide receiver combinations, formations? One of the things that I think I would like to see more with the running backs is more downhill, more getting them downhill, full head of steam, compared to being in an offset eye
right.
in a shotgun to where they're not building up speed, getting to the line of scrimmage. I know that we talked about this when we were talking about the Philadelphia Eagles last year with what running back? DeMarco Murray. Because they were getting him side to side and they weren't getting him to his
correct.
Strength of full speed downhill. That's Rashad Jennings' strength. That is Orleans Darkwa's strength.
Definitely.
That is their strength of being able to hit the hole full speed and run through the arm tackles. So that's something that I would like to be seen done moving forward here. More of a downhill rushing attack instead of shotgun handed off where the running back can't gain as much momentum. And the other thing that they need to do is because of the inability of the tight end position being able to block, mm-hmm. I've been saying this since they signed Will Beatty, put your next best lineman on the field. Go jumbo tight end. Go unbalanced. Do something so you can set the edge at that point of attack where the tight ends won't get bookend. And it doesn't matter if they know that you're running the ball or not, if you're getting 2 or 3 yards a chunk.
Yeah, see, that this is something that we've talked about on different shows here, David. You and I haven't been paired
yeah.
on this particular
no.
program, but I'm a big proponent of the jumbo formation.
Yeah. Or going unbalanced, bringing somebody else in. You got to do something to set the edge and put the strength to it and man up.
And simply put, that's because they don't have the personnel at fullback. It doesn't exist.
Nope.
And the tight ends are not adept at doing it.
No.
So you got to figure out a different way to do it.
Yes.
And that's the only way.
That's the only way.
You know, Brett Jones did it a bit in the 4-minute offense in Dallas. If you want him to be him instead of Beatty, that's fine too. The bottom line is get a big body on the field.
Yeah. yeah.
I'm with
yeah.
you, David. All right, Joe from Pennsylvania, you're next on the show. Hello.
Paul.
Hi.
David, I agree what you are talking about. This is what I'm calling up the fall about. Has anybody seen Beatty, what he's been looking like in practice?
Well, he's a full go, and by this point he's acclimated to what it is that they want to do. But right now they're thinking that he's not one of the best five, because if he was, he'd be on the field.
Exactly, and there was times where he's gotten reps with the one, and he didn't continue to prove that he was better than one of the guys on the outside.
Well,
like I said, having said that, put your six best linemen on the field and get it done.
Question now would be, would it be him? Would it be Jones? Would it be Newhouse if he's healthy?
Yeah.
Who is number six? Right now we don't know because the Giants don't use a jumbo formation.
Nope.
Well, we better do something because we've been getting smacked around a long time from the Eagles. They have knocked the socks off us. We won one game in the last 10 games about at home and about 2 games in the last 20. And they were talking yesterday, well, this goes back to Andy Reid's days that they own the Giants. I hate to say it. It goes back to Buddy Ryan. I remember Buddy Ryan saying, we're not sure how we're going to beat the Giants. We know we're just going to beat them. And they've been knocking us, and it's time, Paul. We got to do something. Like I said, they have a great front four again, okay, with Cox and their other tackle. But their
Brandon Graham's pretty good. Don't forget about him.
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Brandon Graham. He's having a heck of a year.
But their soft spot really is Barwin. You can knock him around here. He's good against Russian, but he is light for playing that in there. That is a weak spot. And I would put Beatty out there or somebody else that can block, because you can knock him 10 yards back. He's the weak link, I'm telling you. And we seem to run right up the middle all the time. Most of our runs, I'm telling you, it's between the guards. It seems like we're going up there. And I know that's our strength, but that's their strength, too. So I just don't want to see us going with three wide receivers and their front four coming. And you know, Eli gets the snap and they're on him right away. We got to do something else, because I think if we don't turn the ball over and make goofy penalties in that, we have the better defense. I still like our defense against their offense and, uh-huh, and our specialty team. We can score with our specialty teams too. So
Hold on, Joe. Hold on. The Eagles have one of the most potent special teams in the league for several years. Don't sell them short, please. Yeah. They're really good.
I'm short, but I'm just saying we have them too. We scored a touchdown on a specialty team.
Giants got good special teams, but don't shortchange Philly.
I'm not cutting them short, but they fell asleep last week. I see them all the time too, Paul.
All right.
They fell asleep last week. That changed that game right around. The kicker ran for 30 yards on them, the punter.
All right, Joe.
So, hey, but I'm just saying, I agree. We got to do something. We just can't go out there and have the three wide receivers there and their front four in the backfield as soon as Eli's getting the ball. That is we're going to lose the game if that happens.
I'm with you, Joe. I think you're right. That's what the Eagles want to do. You got to prevent them from doing it. Thank you. Let me ask David this. To combat what he's talking about, the Eagles will run blitz a lot, and they'll do it in the A and the B gaps between the tackles.
Yeah,
they'll stuff the gaps.
Yeah, this is their 4-3 is a very easy scheme. It's a one gap and go. That's it. They play the run on the way to the quarterback, and they want to be as disruptive up front with the mesh and the schemes of the running game.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If you're going to try to combat that, and maybe speed is the best way instead of necessarily pushing a mano with the extra jumbo, maybe Bobby Rainey, who's got more quicks than the other backs, maybe Paul Perkins, who has more quicks than the other backs, might this be a week to get them more involved because their speed might be better out to the edge?
Yes, but once you do that, you're putting the onus that the tight end is going to get the job at the point of the attack, sealing the edge and making sure that they don't have anybody from the inside of the defensive line, whether it's the defensive end, whether it's the Sam playing on the ball, retracing to the outside. But you made a great point. In order to do that, if they want to clog up the gaps inside, you've got to be able to widen and stretch the field by getting the ball to outside, and that way then you start to loosen up things in the inside. Also, this is where running the inside zone scheme or power scheme can play to your favor, because if you can get people upfield, you can trap them. You can get them out of the hole. You can pull and knock them out and kick out. Or if they're going in that pace and they're getting upfield like they want to, this is a game where screens and an intermediate passing game as the extension of the running game have to come into play. Because if you're getting these defensive linemen upfield, you have to do something and make them stop and pause for a second before they do that to think, well, maybe they might dunk it over my head, or maybe there's a screen as well.
All right, let's go to line two. Nugs from Kansas City is next on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Dave? It was nice to finally talk to you one time.
You as well, man. How's everything going?
Everything is great, man. Basically, well, you know, you guys have pretty much touched on what I wanted to touch on, because I feel like with the blueprint on how Dallas got off the hook, because I feel Philly let them off the hook in that game. I've never pulled for the Eagles ever.
I think we lost.
I think we did. I would say this. I do believe, David, as I watched that Dallas-Philly game on Sunday night, Philadelphia gave that game away. I thought the play selection was poor. I thought they did some very, very foolish things, time management as well. And you know what? So Dallas took advantage of it, and they got the win.
They did. And here, when you sit here and look back, woulda, shoulda, coulda, but when you're watching the game unfold, you can easily see the points in the game where right away the Cowboys were able to take back that momentum and put it back on their side.
Yeah. Eagles road record, by the way, Dave has given us some information here. This year, 1-3 on the road. Last 2 years, 4-4 apiece on the road. So certainly they have not been the same as they have played down at the Link. Jeff from New York, you're next on the show. Hello. Jeff, are you there? All right, we lost him too. Want to try Charles from Phoenix. You're next on the program.
Hey, how you going, guys?
Hi.
Peter, what's up?
How's everything?
I just wanted to talk. I feel like watching the team, like, it's, you know, it's professional sports. Everybody on the team has been the best at their level when it comes from either high school and college. And right now, at this level, the difference between teams is coaching and play calling. And when I watch the game, I know everybody says everything's predictable, but I feel like when I watch other teams, they actually scheme. They come out with different things, and they do different things. And when they want to run the ball, they scheme to run the ball. And not so just much personnel. They come in with heavy packages and fullbacks. And if they don't have these people on their team, the coaches go out and create these players. So I feel like the difference is in coaching, and we don't see that on our team this year.
Well, David, I appreciate his frustration.
Yeah.
Okay, I do. But here's the problem. It's a lot easier said than done to just get out of that malaise, because so many things are happening right now with teams, whether it be salary cap issues, injury issues. The way teams are built, this isn't the old days. Charles, I'm getting the opinion that you, much like me, yearn for the golden era of the 1980s.
Yes, I'm Parcells ball.
There you go.
And I love that type of football, too.
You know, and with all due respect, because you didn't play in the 80s, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And to some degree, the early Coughlin teams were throwbacks to that era.
Yes.
And so I think what I'm sensing from you is a frustration in general about the state of the game, more so than specifically what the Giants are doing. Am I correct?
Well, if you look at – and I hate to use the Patriots, but I feel like they're
different. they're different.
If you look at let's just use Madden, for instance. If you look at the Patriots play calling on Madden, every defense in football is on their side, because you don't know what what Belichick's going to bring. He's going to set up his scheme for that week for that team, whether it's the 46, 55, 3-4, 4-3, no matter what. And he's prepared that team to be ready. And I feel like that's coaching. We don't just come in with whatever we have. Let's put our three receivers out there and see what happens.
Charles, I want to get philosophical with you for a second. I don't want to cut you off, but I think it's important. Keep him on, Dave. I don't want to lose him.
I know.
Big picture, Charles. And I have said this for years. You know, I've been covering the game for more than three decades. I believe that any coordinator, any head coach worth his grain of salt, can sit here on a Wednesday and draw up the proper game plan to beat his opponent. That's not the problem. That's not the issue. Anybody, I think, worth his grain of salt, who's any good at his job, can do that. The problem becomes when you don't have the pieces and the parts to execute the game plan that you know can work. And it's now, okay, we want to be able to do this, this, and this, because we know that's going to help us win, but we only got guys who do that, that, and that. So how do we get that, that, and that to do this, this, and this? And that's where it gets really tricky, because in some cases, it won't happen. The Giants don't have a blocking fullback. They don't have a power blocking tight end. That's not going to happen. We can't go out there and make it happen, David.
And when you talk about the defensive side of the ball, yes, they went out and got more pieces to the puzzle, but it's still not finished yet in regards to Steve Spagnuolo and his understanding. He's been in a 4-3 system. He's learned a 3-4 system, and he's learned under Dean Pease when he was in Baltimore as well. So he has the versatility, but at the same time, you've got to have the players that can do it on the go, on the run, and have that ability to, in the middle of a game, change the scheme, be able to adapt to what's happening during a game. And when you have injuries and when you have young players, it's hard to put that type of responsibility on someone.
Charles, remember one other thing, too. Even though a coach and a coordinator will diagram a game plan, and even if he's really good at making adjustments, and even if he's really good at motivation, the one thing you have to remember is that everything is a risk and reward situation with a head coach.
Yep.
He knows that, you know what, going into this game, there are certain things that I think I want to do, I think I can do, but there's a risk involved. Yeah. And if I'm going to send more pressure on Sunday, well, then guess what? I know I'm leaving my corners out to dry.
Live and die by the blitz.
Okay?
Yeah.
And some coaches are going to do that. Yeah. Other coaches are going to say, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to sit back. You make philosophical decisions where you have to understand the risk and reward factor. And that's going to be the case every week, because you know what? This league is full of parity. And every week, almost every coach in this league is forced with a plethora of risk and reward decisions as they formulate their game plan. And that wasn't the case back in the 80s. You had 10 teams that maybe, you know, the Giants were great, the Bears were great, you know, the Niners were terrific. You pretty much knew that those were the elite teams. And they could say, you know what, this is the game plan we're drawing up, and this is what we're going to do, and if we execute better than those guys, we're going to win the game. They didn't have to play risk-reward.
No, and the good thing for the Giants right now where they're at is, number one, they're coming off of a bye week. That's where you do all that self-evaluation. But also, it gives them an extra week to get a game plan ready for this Eagles game.
That's true.
So they were able to sit back, watch the Sunday night game, as well as all the evaluations and game prep that they've done before that, to come up with a game plan that they have to, walking into the door on Monday, feel confident with in order to direct this football team to win games because of the extended time period. We're at a point in the season coming off of the bye week. Here we are in week number 9. There's no more excuses.
No.
You can't have any excuses at this point.
Well, I want to make one more point. I want to listen to you guys off the air.
Go ahead, Charles.
So listening to what you just said, so do you think that maybe the quality of coaching is going down? And thanks for taking my call, guys.
I wouldn't say the quality of coaching has gone down, but I will say the quality of players coming from college to the professional level being NFL ready has definitely gone down. It has gone down as a
Dave, we got a dial tone on the air here. There you go.
No, but what I was saying is I think the transition from a college player going from the college game to the pro game has gotten much worse because of spread offenses, players not getting into a stance, into a three-point stance as offensive linemen.
Absolutely.
Quarterbacks not being able to diagnose things because, number one, they haven't had to do it. They have a coordinator flipping numbers to them on the side of what play to go to.
Right.
And also the ability for a quarterback to take a snap under center. These are all things that are affecting the way that the NFL game is played because of the CBA, because of the short amount of time that coaches are given to these young players. You either adapt or die. And you have to find a way to put these players in positions where you're not overwhelming them with a playbook and scheme, but you're putting them in a position to win and bringing out their strengths as a player.
You know, David's an old school guy. He played with one organization for the better part of a decade, and that's not the way it is anymore.
No.
You know, the players' union wants guys to have free agency. They want to make as much money as they possibly can. And look, a guy comes out of school. He signed a 5-year deal, but guess what? The fifth year is an opt-out.
Yeah,
he's not even signing a 5-year deal.
Because
he's opting out after year 4.
Without a doubt.
And he's looking for the biggest paycheck.
And that's why, you know, I know I'm going off on a tangent here. But
no,
I
but
have
see,
to.
This is okay.
This is why I think that this way that the NFL schedule is laid out now, because of the amount of rest times players have, it's awful. Players are at their best conditioning, their understanding of their offense and of their team, when at the end of the offseason program, when they've done all the OTAs, all the installations and minicamp, but then you're going to give them 6 weeks away from the facility to do whatever they want to do, be away from a playbook, and then come back and then have to restart all over. As a veteran, as a player for myself who played in the same system 11 years, I could do it. For a young player to lose that much time, it absolutely crushes them, and it makes a coach take more individual time on a player, which he has to do, where he could at that point do it to the whole overall group. So I feel like it should be cut to where there's only 2 weeks away from the facility, come back for 2 more weeks, go away for 2 weeks, and then, boom, start with the NFL season. I think there would be a better game starting off. There would be more competitive games going, and I think that there would be less injuries because there wouldn't be that 6 week long away from the facility.
See, he's old school. Even though you're younger than I am, you're old school.
And to think about this, I'm only 3 years away from the game.
Yeah.
So it's changed that much even since I've retired in 13.
So anyway, Charles, just to finish our point, it is a general philosophy about how the game is constructed and how the game has to be administrated and it has to be coached and played. It's watered down. It's watered down by the very foundation of how the league is formed. And that's really a bigger problem than the coaching itself, at least in my opinion.
I agree.
All right. 201-939-4513. Mike from Florida, you're next. Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Great.
What's going on? Yeah, it's, yes, my name is Mike from Florida. I'm like the uncle for Jason. I mean, why are we not, like inserting Paul Perkins? I mean, we don't need no high price left tackle, you know, because that, I mean, I was watching that they're trying to bring in that kid from Cleveland.
Joe Thomas.
I mean, he's making he's making $10 million. We don't need that, you know.
Joe Thomas is making $10 million for a reason, because the minute that he's been drafted by the Cleveland Browns, he's been out there every single game as the blind side. So as much as you want to say that, Joe Thomas is worth every single penny of that money.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's like 31 years old, ain't he? Over 30. I mean, we don't need that, but we don't need all these. I mean, we got the personnel. I mean, why can't we just bring in that guard we had from Canada? I mean, he's doing a good job.
Brett Jones is the backup center. He's the backup center. And he can play guard in a pinch, but he's really supposed to be a center. Where do you want to put him, though?
A fullback. So why don't we insert him and insert Paul Perkins?
Okay.
Because I believe when we have Paul Perkins, behind the center, I mean, he's doing a good job. I mean, he does a good job. Because, Jenkins, all these guys, I don't think they cut up to what we're trying to do, though. But Paul Perkins is the right running back.
Well, Mike, we talked during the early part of the show, I don't know if you were able to tune in, about the jumbo formation and something David and I would like to see. And we also raised the issue of Perkins' speed may be something they could use against this Philly defense.
Yeah, and that's something I was actually going
to
bring.
That's what we need, though, because now we're not going to be able to
he agrees. You know,
Mike's rolling. I love it.
I'm glad you agree, Mike.
You know, I mean, we're just not going to be able to throw the ball like like we normally do. You know what I mean? We need to run the ball. We need to run the ball.
I agree with you.
We can't throw the ball like that, though.
And so does Coach McAdoo, by the way.
Yeah, and I was actually going to bring up that point, Mike, here, ask about Paul Perkins, and E, the chosen one, through Twitter, sent a question about Paul Perkins as well. At this point, absolutely, getting him more touches, getting him in the game, because we've seen his ability of what he's able to do. He can be that home run hitter that can bring the speed, the cutback ability to catch out of the backfield. I think now is the time that you can have confidence in him that he could pick up the protections. That's the biggest thing of any running back coming into the NFL.
Sure.
You've got to be able to read through protections. You better be able to scan from one side of the field and the other, and you've better be able to pick those things up, because if you don't have that understanding, you're not going to be out on the football field. Now I feel like they have more confidence in him, and they feel that they can go to him more now.
We don't know the extent of the injury to Bobby Randy's calf. Let me just tell you this. Bobby Randy is, again, one of the quicker running backs on this roster, and they'd like to use him in the old Shane Vereen role.
Yes.
Now, depending upon what this calf injury is, he may be more limited than what we know, which basically throws Perkins into the fire.
Exactly. Brings him right up, and it brings him right into this game plan.
But at the same time, you know, I'm looking at it like, like Ezekiel Elliott, but I think Paul Perkins is as good as him.
Wait a minute. Ezekiel Elliott's not a quicks guy. He's a power guy. He's a power guy.
He's a power guy, but at the same time, I'm a big Tiki Barber fan. I mean, I watch Tiki since Virginia, because I remember Tiki back in Virginia, him and his brother. I mean, Tiki wasn't a 200 pound. Tiki was
he grew into it. He grew into it. Mike, I'm going to let you go because we got a few more calls we got to get to.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but thank you so much, and call again. 201-939-4513. Nugs, we lost you before. We're going to try it again. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
All right. Welcome back.
Thanks. What I was saying last before I was cut off was this feels like a must-win situation. This feels like one of the games that in the past years where our season could either take off or slide towards mediocrity, that we just didn't get the job done. And I know that we're going to have to go to Philly later on in the year. So I just really hope that we can get this win. I mean, you guys have already touched on the power running game. I feel that's how Dallas really exposed Philly for that comeback, was they finally started feeding Ezekiel Elliott. But I think our O-line, the last caller, I'm not sure what he was looking at, turning his nose up at the guy from Cleveland, Mr. Thomas. I would have loved if we could have made a move for him, because I think that would have definitely stepped our O-line game up, because this guy, Brandon Graham, I'm just scared about him coming off that edge. You know, I've seen our right tackle give up some big hits to off the speed rush and, you know, the strip sack. And I just, you know, even if you look at that last game with the Eagles, where the Eagles played against Dallas, Graham had a lot of pressure, and Dak had to
make a lot of moves.
Yeah, Brandon Graham is a natural leverage player. He's a 6-foot guy, so he can bend, he can get power, he can dip that edge. He has nice change-up moves. And you think about once they get into the passing situations, they put him and Cox to the offensive right side. What have those two players been able to do together? 62 quarterback pressures and 8 sacks from that one side alone when those two are paired together.
Scared.
Yeah.
I got a good idea. How about the Giants avoid third and long?
Exactly. That's the biggest thing that the Giants have to do against this team. In order to be successful, they've got to be able to run inside the tackles, because you're going to have wide nines. So the mesh between the double teams between the center and the guards have to get up to the second level, and the tackles have to move the defensive end, or the inside zone play is not going to go anywhere. So that is definitely necessary in order to open up things, to apply some pressure. And more than anything, the way that the defense of the Eagles have played this season and when they're playing their best, it's them dictating the tempo of the football game.
Absolutely.
It's them being able to dial up blitzes whenever they want. And Jim Schwartz, their defensive coordinator, having that cockiness and swagger that he has as a coordinator that's rubbed off onto their football team, that they don't care. Anytime they have a big play, anytime that they're back on their heels, that's when you start to see mess-ups, clean-ups, mental errors on their aspect, and other teams take advantage of it.
Yeah, but Schwartz has been dialing up the blitz a lot more lately in the last couple of weeks than he had earlier in the season. I just got one more question for you, Paul, and I'll take it off the,
Okay.
Air. With the trade deadline – that just passed.
Yes.
I was a little disappointed that we didn't make any moves. I'm not sure if we might have made a move, but I don't think we made anything that was worth any headlines or talking about. And I'm just was wondering if you were Jerry Reese, would you have made any moves to improve this team? And if so, what would they have been?
I'm not talking out of school here when I tell you that Jerry Reese was asked the other day if the phone lines were open, and he said he had had some talks. He had had some conversations leading into the trade deadline, and nothing was materializing as of that point on Monday. Well, clearly, as of Wednesday at 4 o'clock, nothing did happen. That does not mean, though, they didn't try. Again, Jerry admitted he had some conversations. Yep. Now, it's your guess as good as anybody's as to who they might have thought about or what those prices might have been, but clearly there was not a good fit or they would have pulled the trigger.
Well, clearly there wasn't a good fit amongst the NFL, considering the fact that we've only heard two names in that trade. Jamie Collins out of the Patriots and Jonathan Banks to the Lions.
And that's,
those have been the only trades.
I would have loved to have got our hands on Jamie Collins, man. That third round. Oh, my God.
Thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it, Nuggs. Yeah. I would say this for everybody out there, and we fielded a lot of calls on this show in the last week or so, David, about Joe Thomas.
Yeah.
Look, there's no question about his ability to play this game, and he's got many years to come, I think. He's just a really, really good player.
And I know somebody mentioned his age, but in this CBA, he'll be able to play a long time. And the one thing about Joe Thomas, the minute that he has been a Cleveland Brown, he has been the mainstay at that left tackle position. As a former offensive lineman, a guy who would watch film, his technique was the same each and every play. And you may not think of him as this big because he's not an overpowering type of mauler type of player, but he makes up with it with leverage technique. And more than anything, durability. He's always there.
Always, always. So the only thing I would say about him is that if the reports in the papers and on the internet and so forth were true, that a second-round draft pick was going to pry him away from the Browns, don't you think that somebody around the league would have been able to pay a number two to acquire this guy?
Yep.
My hunch is either he wasn't really on the block like some people thought.
Or they're asking outrageous.
The price must have been a lot higher than that, because I think there are a lot of teams in this league who probably could have parted with a number two for him.
Yeah, I think that there were.
So that's just my thoughts. All right, let's go back to the phone calls. We have approximately 10 minutes left on the show. Anthony is in Dallas. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing, Quality?
Good to talk to you.
I just want to talk about the defense, man. This game is going to be won on the defensive side of the ball. Last year, defense was what worried me. And this year is just the offense. I just do not have much confidence in the offense, but I know it has to be won on defense. And Landon Collins, man, he's been the MVP. I think where he goes, the defense goes. And I just think this year he's played phenomenal. And as long as he plays good, I think the defense will follow. And that's just going to be key for this game coming up.
Anthony, I'm going to second what you said by saying right here and right now, David, Landon Collins to me is the first half MVP of this team.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly with that. The way that he's bounced back from his rookie year to this year, playing confident, leading the team in tackles, making a huge play in London and that interception return for a touchdown. I think that his play will get even better once you start getting Burhey back, Thompson back, and other players out on the field to allow him to be more of a free player and roamer to where he can be more aggressive as a player as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough living in Dallas right now, man. These people are just hyped up, and it's crazy. You know, we got to hide in a little hole right now, and I hope they catch some L's and we catch more W's, and hopefully we can turn this around. And we could be on top of the NFC East.
December 11th, Dallas Cowboys come up to MetLife Stadium. It is a Sunday night NBC game. I got a hunch NBC's going to keep it. That's not going to get flexed out.
No, that's not going to flex out.
No way.
Thanks for the call, Anthony.
Thanks for taking my call.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon. Okay, Charlie, you're up next, and I'm not going to give you any sound effects. We're going to save time for your phone call.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Hey, David, I wanted to talk to you because you know the O-line. I just want you to give me a nutshell of how getting Joe Thomas would have changed our whole offensive line. How would that have changed our whole offensive line, the way we run block, the way we pass protect, just adding that one Pro Bowl player?
Bringing one Pro Bowl player would allow you to do different things, not only running the football, but schematically in protections, because it would bring a player to the left tackle position where you wouldn't have to worry about chipping with the running back, lining up a tight end to that side so that he, on his way out for routes, can chip or hit. I think that it would allow more things to be done in regards to sliding protections, moving different players to other positions, maybe moving Eric Flowers to the right tackle position where I feel is his strength and where he will be long-term as an NFL
Amen.
Player. And it would allow you to have more depth. And the one thing that it will allow you to do as well, we were talking about one of the things that I feel should be implemented is using a jumbo tight end. It would allow you to have flexibility of whether you wanted to use Bobby Hart, Marshall Newhouse, or William Beattie, who still has not shown up yet on the stat sheet, on putting your best five and another blocker out on the field to control the line of scrimmage and to control the point of attack.
Why would we not go get this guy? I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but I saw one thing saying that they wanted a third and a fifth for this guy. And if that is true, why JR didn't pull the trigger on that, he should resign today.
Charlie, I said it before you called.
Yeah.
If the prices that were advertised were accurate, there are a lot of teams that would have spent those prices.
Yep. Somebody would have moved.
There's got to be something else involved. The price must have been a lot higher because it seemed too reasonable to make the deal.
Yeah.
And I'll just say, just to add what you were saying, David, is that with him on the team, not only would have made our offense better, it would have made our defense better because finally we would have been able to run the ball and we would have been able to control the clock and keep our defense off the field as much as they've been. And our defense is good. They would be great with less time on the field. And I can't understand why we didn't go after him or Staley or somebody because we still can't run the ball. We still can't pass protect. Eli's going to have to get the ball out in about a second flat. And I don't see how that changes. And I'll say one more thing, and I'll let you guys go. I don't believe that Bobby Hart, Newhouse, and even Flowers is better than Will Beatty. Will Beatty is a veteran left tackle. He had, in Pro Football Weekly, before he got injured, he was a better run blocker than he was a pass protector. I can't understand. They've got to change things up. They can't keep putting that same offensive line out there hoping that they're going to be able to run the ball. It's never going to happen. I don't understand it. But I'll let you guys go. I hope we beat Philly. I just don't see how we're going to, but maybe we will. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Charlie. Thank you.
Charlie, I greatly appreciate a female caller calling in knowing about offensive line play. That's what I'm talking about on a Wednesday. But in regards to William Beatty and his performance out on the football field, he's had his opportunities. He hasn't maximized them, and he hasn't shown this coaching staff that he deserves to be out on the field at this point. But having said that, the Pro Football Weekly thing that you read, I played with William Beatty. He was a much better pass protector than he was a run blocker.
Without a doubt.
So I don't know who wrote that up, but somebody who played with him and was next to him, he was a much better pass protector than he was a run blocker.
And Charlie, let me make something very clear. These coaches, they understand that this offensive line has not blocked as consistently or as well, especially for the run, as they would like them to. They get that.
They're watching the same games that we are.
Absolutely. And they look at those rushing totals, and they're shaking their heads. And trust me, if they thought that lineman 6, 7, or 8 was going to make
done,
a difference, they'd make the change.
They would make the change.
I mean, honestly, they would. They would, Charlie. Let's see what we have on Twitter, David. I didn't do enough for Twitters today.
No problem. I'll jump on right
now. All right. Hashtag Giants chat as we close out the program. Let's see here. I know we had some talk before about here we go. Gentleman wants to know about the Browns. He's guessing that the price must have been a number one or something like that because he also thinks that the price could not have been what was reported, and that's certainly interesting. A.J. Marshall says, Giants pass rush needs to make Carson Wentz uncomfortable, get sacks on him. First half of the season, he was inconsistent. Well, you know what, David? The one thing that I see, and you mentioned it earlier, they're protecting him a lot because he's doing all short stuff. He's not really holding the ball very long. They're not throwing the ball very deep at all. They're giving him every opportunity to play within a very restrictive scheme.
70% of his throws are for 10 yards or less. So they are managing the way that he plays the game. But having said that, like I said, the thing that's really been impressive with him is his ability to, number one, dissect things at the line of scrimmage. You see him making checks and audibles as a young player that is phenomenal to see out of a player who has so many different schemes and looks that are going up against him by defensive coordinators testing him. But I think his ability to be more athletic than we thought he was, changing the launch point, especially with his accuracy like an Aaron Rodgers. I'm not comparing him to Aaron Rodgers, but his accuracy when he's rolling outside the pocket to the right. That's where he is at his strength. And I think the biggest X factor for this football game, which is in any game, it's going to be Darren Sproles. That guy does it in the receiving game. He does it in the rushing game. He does it in the return game. He's the X factor for this football game.
It's interesting you mention him, David, because last week in the Dallas game, Sproles carried the ball 15 times for 80-plus yards. Now, it looks like now this they're thinking about leaning on him now more in the running game than they had before because they weren't necessarily pleased with their other backs.
Yes.
If I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm actually liking to hear that because, to me, Sproles is more dangerous leaking out of the backfield in open space. That's where he gives me nightmares as a coordinator. If you're going to line him up in the backfield and just hand him the ball from a straight start, I'm happy.
And you're just hoping that the hits on him are cumulative because he's not the biggest back, but he is. He is elusive. He can cut on a dime. He can do everything that you want out of a running back, but like you said, can he carry the bulk? No, he can't do that. So this is a time when he is in there, you've got to make sure that you hit him and you hit him hard so that he feels it. But like I said, his ability, think about him as a career player. He's had 20 rushing touchdowns, 29 receiving, and 7 punt returns.
The guy's a multidimensional threat who plays best when he's in space.
And one of the
ways, it's just that simple.
And one of the ways that what are the Eagles going to try to do? They're going to try to match him up one-on-one up against the Giants linebackers.
Okay, but if this is true, that they're going to start leaning on him more as a running back who's going to carry the ball out of a standard set, again, I don't want to help the Eagles out here. But I don't think that's a great way to use him.
No. But obviously they're feeling that coming into this game and having a game plan that they feel that he can be used more in the running game as a change-up back to a Ryan Matthews, who, as we know, he's an inside between the tackles.
Oh,
he's
a
downhill player, and he doesn't bring what Sproles brings to that offense.
Big Egomania says, if this is a copycat league, then who are the Giants copying? Clearly the Packers and not the Patriots. You know, again, you got to have the personnel, though. It's easy to say, I want to do that, but if you don't have the personnel, you can't do it.
No. I think more than anything, like we discussed, I think this is the time where you will truly be able to evaluate where the New York Giants are off of as a football team coming off of this bye, getting a full extra week off of the bye to game plan and prepare for this game, because this is a must win for the Giants. The last two seasons, the Giants are 0-4 up against the Eagles, and to take a step up in this NFC race, they need to go to 5-3 and beat the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday.
All right, final question of the day comes from Twitter. It's a lighthearted question, David. AJ Marshall wants to know, which rookie's costume did you like the most for Halloween?
You love all the costumes that the guys had. I will just say this. When I was a rookie, you would have loved my costume. I actually went to the Meadowlands and got a jockey outfit to wear to the hospital. So I would I would have been the biggest jockey you've ever seen in your life.
Poor horse. Yeah. Oh, my God. I happen to think that Dante Dion dressed as a strip of bacon.
Hilarious.
Was pretty funny.
Hilarious. You
gotta
love it.
You don't want a defensive back getting sizzled.
But look at Paul dropping that. That is something that is awesome to see, because as a young rookie, I did that in 2003, going to the hospital visit, and you can see what the Giants do off of the field to help out in the community as well.
Good stuff by the Giants rookies, and congratulations to them for their community service. We certainly appreciate everything that those guys have done. All right, so we're going to wrap up today's show. Remember, Monday to Friday, 12 noon Eastern time for 1 hour. We are always here, 201-939-4513. Write down the number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. David Deal and I will be back with you on MSG Network today at 2 o'clock Eastern time. Giants press conference live. We got all the highlights, all the breakdowns of what the Giants need to do to beat the Eagles. Encore presentation tonight at 6 o'clock on MSG. Also rerunning at 11:30 at night if you happen to be staying up after hockey and basketball. You can't get enough of Giants football. We're the place for it. We'll see you again next time.
Have a great one.